So what's going on in the office, man?
Well, we've had a good week so far. A lot of patience, working hard and patient, interesting patients. We get them every day. I've got a good one for you that occurred today. Actually, I wouldn't say this is an interesting patient story. It's really a bad doctor story. You want to hear it?
I want to hear a bad doctor story.
Because I like to occasionally I'll take a riff off on my own profession. And this is a story that I thought was really interesting today. And hopefully it doesn't happen too much, but it happened and just kind of disgusting type behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, for most part, I think doctors are really good people. They care about their patients and, but they can get arrogant, I'm not really arrogant because I have no reason to be, but this is a pretty good story actually, but I had a request to call a patient back concerning his son. Would I speak to him and get my opinion on his son? And I know this guy. He's a doctor also. And so I called him up and said, "What's going on with your son?" And he goes, "I just want to get your opinion on something. My son had a seizure. He was playing sports and had gotten really dehydrated and had a focal seizure, meaal not a grand mal seizure, but a focal on the left side. And, enough to really scare this doctor. And he took him to the emergency room, and the workup there was negative. But, of course, they thought he ought to get a neurological evaluation, of course, which you definitely would. And so this doctor takes his son to, I'm not going to mention any names or where this occurred or anything, of course, but he went to a huge referral center somewhere. And I won't tell you, but it's somewhere in the southeastern United States, and saw the head of pediatric neurology. And so the doctor wasn't able to come in the room with him. Only the wife actually took him in there. So anyway, it turns out that they ran some tests and really everything was fairly negative, but the neurologist wanted to put him on a lifelong seizure medicine for one seizure. So my doctor friend called up there to the doctor that saw him. And when he got on the phone, the doctor goes, "Why are you calling me? Why do I need to talk to you? I've already talked to your wife. Why are you calling me?" So I thought that was like the most rudest thing I've ever heard in my life. Why are you calling me? Because my son just had a seizure and I want to know if he can do anything besides take this medicine for the rest of his life based on one seizure. Please talk to me for a minute or two, and that was the arrogant attitude that this specialist had. And he was asking my opinion about it. And you know what I told him? Get another opinion.
Yeah.
Go somewhere else. But because that was just ridiculous. Remember, medicine is opinions. That's what it is. It's a bunch of opinions. And you get different opinions on different things. So if you're not happy with it, especially if somebody treats you with just the rude, arrogant, disgusting behavior like that, you definitely don't need to be seeing that doctor again. Just find somebody who is a little bit empathetic and will actually talk to you if your son had a seizure. I mean, good gracious, that's just a terrible doctor story. I don't think that happens a whole lot, but I just heard this today. So, I do not like arrogant doctors. I know doctors get busy and, they're stressed. And matter of fact, there's a great article in the Wall Street Journal today about doctor burnout. And it's a new book. As a matter of fact, I'll probably read it and review it on one of my podcasts about why doctors are so frustrated with their medicine. And it's not that they don't want to help people. It's the system that they have to work in that's causing a moral problem with them. it's really causing a problem of morality because they want to treat the patients like human beings, but the system won't let them a lot of times. And they're talking about how many doctors commit suicide, how many quit, how many are burned out. It's a high number. So anyway, that's my bad doctor story. I don't mind telling bad doctor stories because, you know, you need to know how to act if something happens to you.
I think it's also very clear that, you know, you love doctors. You know, you're not trying to attack physicians. But it is like an arrogant doctor to me is the biggest just turn off. I don't like it at all. And, you know, we talk a lot about how, you know, it needs to be a conversation between, you know, the doctor, provider, and the patient. And unfortunately, you know, because of some of the systems issues, you know, I think it can be a one-sided conversation. And it can be a little like I'm talking down to you type conversation. And that to me, I can't stand. I cannot stand it.
And this was an ivory tower type of doctor. He doesn't need to be seeing patients. He needs to be sticking his nose in a book and doing research and getting lab and not dealing with patients, you know, which a lot of doctors just can't deal with patients. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting story. I would never use names or anything of anybody, but I'll always get a second opinion. If you're not satisfied, get a second opinion. And remember, that doctor's working for you. You're his customer, you know, and, you know, you want an honest answer, but just don't approach it that way.
Real quick, because I want to make sure we get to the questions that came in throughout the week. As patients, how do we approach this whole concept that medicine is opinions? Because one, that kind of gives me some relief. Okay, you know, it keeps me open-minded. But also it's like, man, you know, you also want like, you know, some certainty to a degree. How do you coach patients on how to deal with the fact that medicine is opinions? Because, you know, everyone has, you know, no matter what type of doctor you are, provider, you know, everyone seems to have kind of their philosophies and thoughts.
You just need to, get a doctor who you connect with and who's knowledgeable, empathetic, open to ideas and different ways of treatment. And, you know, some things we know for certain what works. Other things are, you know, especially a lot of things that we see that people have gone to three or four different places and not really found the cause of their problem. They just have this. Here's your medicine for it. You know, we'd rather try to find the cause and a cure if we can. But it's just a lot of it's opinions. So don't hesitate to get a second opinion at all. Sometimes it's a hassle. But if something in your mind says, hey, something's not right, you should get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. Kind of like if you get in the hospital, you better have a family member there is checking your back because mistakes are made. I mean, the third leading cause of death in this country, heart disease, number one, cancer's number two, a close third is medical error. And that's kind of shocking, but true. Look it up.
You know, and the other thing I'll say just for, you know, everyone in here, we love healthcare, physicians, providers. You know, I don't think this is coming from a place of like, don't trust healthcare or, you know, doctors. Because I know there's some people who literally just don't trust doctors at all.
You can't take it too far.
Yeah.
You know, just get somebody that will listen to you and, you know, and give you an honest opinion and go about that. But, you know, I'm pro-doctor, of course.
Yeah.
I grew up in a family of doctors and it's a great profession.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just don't like that arrogant. You know, they're no better than anybody else. I don't care where they're working or what, how many degrees they have.
I completely agree. I completely agree. And I love these conversations. And we're going to keep talking about, you know, healthcare. Because I think from a patient's perspective, you know, as the decisions are becoming more and more on the patient, you know, we want to, you know, come in empowered when you're going in to see see your provider or your doctor. So hope that helps, guys. We're going to keep talking about that. Let's get to some questions. If you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. I see Montana's here, our nurse in West Knoxville. Shout out to Montana and the whole crew out there in West Knoxville. I see Katie's out there. Katie, thank you so much. I'm seeing some compliments on my hair. I appreciate that. That means a lot. Motaz, what's going on, man? Great to see you. I owe you an email, by the way. I've seen your email. I need to get back to you. Gave me some great insight around telemedicine. So thank you so much. Okay, let's get to some questions. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's get to this one here. My husband's hands shake pretty bad. So did his dad's. When we ask the doctor about it, they say it's tremors or it's old age. Never have they offered any advice or medications. Are there any medications or supplements that might help with this? He's fairly healthy. We got his cholesterol down without the statins. He's not on any meds right now, just occasionally some supplements. Here's some supplements he's on. CD, garlic, krill oil, and he'll be 67 this month. Happy early birthday, husband. Doc, what's your thoughts?
Well, congratulations on, you know, getting those numbers down, you know, without the medicines. What I'm sure he has, you know, 99% sure, is benign essential or familial tremor. And that's just it can be, usually it's hands, can be, you know, even head, you know, like motion of the head or voice, but it's an inherited thing that it does not mean you have Parkinson's. That's why a lot of people that come to me think, I think I've got Parkinson's. It's not the same kind of tremor. So it's a benign condition, but it can really affect you because like your handwriting or maybe even your speech can get a little quivery. But, you know, I don't know of any supplements that I've ever tried that were real effective for this, to be honest with you. You know, what works is a beta blocker. So if it gets really bad, you can take a beta blocker, a really low dose of propranolol, sometimes 10 milligrams is really a good treatment for it. And that's probably not going to cause the side effects that a lot of high dose beta blockers cause, like fatigue and low heart rate, things like that. So I wouldn't hesitate if it's getting to the point where it bothers him to put him on a really low dose of that. You know, there's some experimental stuff I think they do, like Botox. Sometimes that helps. And there's some weird type of surgeries I've read about too. But unless it's pretty bad, I don't think I would do those. I just use a low dose propranolol probably. But yeah, and it's usually not worrisome though.
All right. Thank you for that question. Came through email. Let's get to our next one here. This came over on Instagram. What is your opinion of taking collagen protein and how much should a person take? Excuse me, this came through email. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I love collagen. I take it. I do the keto collagen, and it's great for joints, hair, nails, skin, you know, aging in general. I don't know how many milligrams I'd recommend. Just follow directions on the, I do one scoop a day. But it's really very effective. It's great for if you're losing cartilage or degenerative disc disease or saggy skin, brittle nails, maybe loss of hair. But I love the keto collagen. That's the one I take.
All right. Thank you for that question. This was a really good one. What would you suggest to someone in their mid-20s with good diet/exercise habits who has an elevated LDL? This is a good question.
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, you know, that's probably inherited. It usually is. It's not anything that you're doing wrong at all. Some people just, their liver manufactures a lot of cholesterol. Again, I wouldn't freak out over it, but what I would do is get an advanced lipid panel, like a Cleveland panel or a Boston Heart panel or Berkeley lipid analysis, and look at the size of the particles, because really just a total cholesterol and HDL and an LDL don't tell much, really. You need to look at your oxidized, how much is of it's oxidized, whether it's your LDL is a pattern A or B, what your ApoB is, which is a not only the LDL, but the other particles, smaller particles like chylomicrons and that, and also triglycerides matter a little bit in that position also. But look at your ApoB. Just look at it further and minimize your other risk factors. I mean, high cholesterol does not cause heart disease in the first place. You know, you need cholesterol for your cell walls and for a lot of things. All your hormones basically come from cholesterol anyway, so you don't want it too low. So don't freak out. Get another panel that looks at it a little bit deeper, like a Cleveland. We run those every day many times. I had a lady today, her cholesterol was 256, and she had her LDL was around 140, but her HDL was really high. Particle size was very big on both the HDL and LDL. Her ApoB was pretty good. So she didn't need to do anything about it. And a lot of people don't. You know, you don't have to get on a statin because of that. Look at your other risk factors. So that's my opinion on that.
And if you want to learn more about kind of the whole cholesterol thing and the Cleveland Heart Panel, if you go to YouTube and search for Performance Medicine Cleveland Heart Panel, you'll have a number of videos come up. There's an Explain This episode with Robin Riddle. She does a great job in like 8 minutes describing what all the Cleveland Heart Panel covers. And then there's another Explain This episode on cholesterol, kind of explaining what Doc just said right there. All right, great stuff, guys. Great start to the show. I love this question. This is another cholesterol question, I think. Super excited that I just got my recent labs back with an HbA1c, which was down to 5.2. Last year was 5.7. Total cholesterol down, HDL was up, LDL was down. Goes on to say cholesterol HDL ratio was down and triglycerides were way down to 48. Wow. But strangely, my glucose was slightly up to 107. Why would glucose be up if everything else, including the A1C, was down? First of all, great stuff. There's great numbers there. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, what's your thoughts?
You've done a great job. Number one, don't worry about that glucose of 107. What's important is the A1C, of course, which is a 3 to 4 month measure, but your sugars are going to go up and down by the minute. So it just happened to be a little bit elevated at that time. You know, most of the time I check people's sugars are over a little over 100. You're not a diabetic. So, you know, check it at different times, you know, time under the curve, meaning the time your sugars is under 120, say, or 125 is the most important thing. So a lot of things can affect it, not just what you ate. I mean, if you eat something, it's going to pop up a little bit. But even cortisol can affect it. You have this thing called the dawn phenomenon where when you wake up, your cortisol levels rise early morning and cortisol will pop your sugar up a little bit. So it's not really important, especially at 107. Wouldn't freak out at all. If you really want to dive into it, get a Freestyle Libre continuous glucose monitor, pop it on the back of your arm for a couple of weeks and see what it does during the night, after you eat, fasting. It's just a wonderful tool. You know, I've done it. I'm not a diabetic, but I've done it. And I love doing a Freestyle Libre just to see. I mean, gosh, mine popped up. After I purposely tried a few, you know, like Starbucks caramel macchiato, popped me up to 170. You know, I'm not a diabetic, but it's good work to get your A1C. It sounds like you're a little bit maybe pre-diabetic at that point. Now you're not. But just continue to eat a low carb diet, maybe do some intermittent fasting, keep your weight normal, working out, keep muscle up, belly fat down. But so don't worry at all about that. Just keep checking it if you're worried, but when I look at those numbers, I think, congratulations, you're doing great.
Awesome. Thank you.
It changes minute by minute. Hey, raising two type 1 diabetic kids, I've watched these sugar levels for years. And I mean, they're pretty variable, a lot of times with no explanation. So it's not, what you're describing is not really a concern.
All right. Great question. Thank you for sending that over through email. All right, guys, that's going to do it for the questions that came in throughout the week. Thank you to those who sent those in. Now we're going to go to live questions. So if anybody here with us live has a question for Dr. Rogers, this last half of the show is where we dive in to these questions here with you live. So if you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. I see we've got a couple here already. I'm going to get to Candy's question on YouTube. Lots of hair loss, more than normal. Do you recommend I go on a higher dose of my progesterone or just up my pellets? It seems that this is hair loss post starting on hormone therapy, I believe. Or maybe it was before that as well. That might not even play a factor into your answer, but what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I get this all the time from people for a lot of different reasons, not just hormones, but COVID caused a lot of hair loss. Stress can cause hair loss. Genetics can cause hair loss. The good thing, you're a woman, and it's easy to kind of get it going back. But certainly make sure your thyroid is optimal, not normal, optimal. Take your B vitamins, especially biotin, and look at the estrogen-progesterone ratio. Really, it's the estrogen. Remember this, hair loves estrogen. It's not real fond of testosterone or DHEA. So if you get that too high, you could have a little bit of hair loss temporarily. So if you're on DHEA, you probably just stop taking it. I've seen that a lot of times. And look at it's really not much of a progesterone deal unless your progesterone's too high in relation to your estrogen, because hair and skin love estrogen. So we'll look at the ratios, and maybe your T level, your testosterone level may be a little higher. So sometimes I'll check a DHT level on you, which is dihydrotestosterone, which is the part of testosterone that's responsible for a couple of things. One is it makes hair loss worse. Two, it makes your prostate bigger. So there's a lot of strategies to clear that up. I mean, I use a lot of things like spironolactone. Sometimes I use finasteride, saw palmetto if your DHT level's kind of high. I use a lot of minoxidil also. So there's a strategy. Come in and we'll look at your, we'll look at your ratios and everything, and maybe adjust your T level, make sure you're getting enough estrogen in there, and not too much progesterone that could lower that estrogen level, and maybe check a DHT level. So, and there's some strategies we can do for hair loss, all kinds of things.
Have you found that some patients who have started either on pellets or, pellets, I guess, for women, they're okay with the hair loss if they're feeling really good, out of curiosity? Because I know the testosterone makes you feel good still.
Yeah, I do. I just don't see that much, from pellets. Just don't see a lot of that. Mm. I mean, it could happen, but it's just not real common. Mm. Especially if you know what you're doing with the ratios of estrogen and testosterone. But I guess it could happen with any kind of hormone replacement or lack of hormones. Mm. If you don't have enough estrogen, your hair is not going to be as good.
Super interesting. Candy, thank you so much for putting that in there. Let's see, Cindy on Facebook. When is it necessary to get a tetanus shot when cut or scratched, and why has it changed to include other boosters?
Well, they've combined it with diphtheria and pertussis because that still occurs. Really every 10 years, is the recommended dose of the DPT shot now. So yeah, they combine it now. I kind of wish they wouldn't do that, but you know, it's, there's still a little bit of diphtheria and pertussis going around. I have actually seen a few adults that had pertussis, whooping cough. But you know, every 10 years, if you can, but I just, knock wood, I don't think I've ever seen a case of tetanus in my practice, 37 years.
All right. I hope that helps, Cindy.
Good question, though. Great question.
Probably, you know, something that pertains to a lot of people. So thank you, Cindy, for putting that in there. Katie just wants to confirm, is that really ginger ale?
Yeah, I told you the first thing. It's just ginger ale. It's Fever Tree ginger ale.
Fever Tree ginger ale. I think we're just going to have to.
That's the only type I drink.
Really? Fever Tree ginger ale?
Yeah, if I have it, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to Steve's question here. My daughter has struggled with depression for years. I've been hearing about psychedelics being used to treat anxiety and depression. Do you have any thoughts on this? By the way, the Methylene Blue podcast was excellent. We plan to start taking this ourselves, and we'll suggest that our daughter try it as well. Thank you, Steve. For that. What's your thoughts on this? It's a very interesting topic, and I know one that, you know, Tim Ferriss has talked a lot about. I'm sure, mm-hmm. you know, Joe Rogan, the whole crew.
Peter Attia talks about it a lot too.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I just got his new book,
yeah.
which I'll do a review on. It's really good. But I mean, a lot of people are doing it. I'm kind of hesitant about it because, I mean, but it's supposed to really help situations like PTSD and maybe even depression, anxiety. But, you know, you're going to, it's not like an easy thing to do. It needs to be monitored by somebody who does a lot of this, a doctor who's, because it just causes you to go on a trip. And I just don't want that. I don't want to do it myself, but, I guess if nothing else is working, it certainly worked for a lot of soldiers with PTSD. I don't have any experience in using it, but it may be a promising, you know, new treatment. LSD, I mean, it was discovered at Stanford University, and it was, I think it was a psychiatrist that discovered. So it may have some useful properties. But I'm not sure what all she's tried. Again, I love saffron. I mean, you can try. I'm not against antidepressants. I use them sometimes, but a lot of times they have a lot of side effects. And sometimes it even makes it worse, especially in younger population. It actually makes them worse. But if you look at the studies, they really are not much better than placebo. But sometimes it takes a combination. There's a lot of thoughts about this. You know, if you can always get to the root cause of the problem, I think it always helps. And a lot of times it's fear, you know, you've done a lot of podcasts with Jamie Winship on fear. So if you can work it out, you know, that way, it's probably better. I just don't know about the use of psychedelics and mushrooms and things like that. That's just, I guess if nothing else worked, I mean, you know, the studies, and I've actually seen it infuses ketamine,
yeah.
you know, an anesthetic drug really works. I certainly wouldn't hesitate to go that route if nothing else is working, because sometimes it can work in one treatment. You know, they get a little, I've seen them get it, they get a little dissociative when they're undergoing the treatment. So it's good to have somebody. It's actually good to have a doctor or an anesthesiologist or nurse anesthetist there when they do that, as well as a psychologist. That'd be the closest thing I would recommend to doing that is IV ketamine. And they do it at some clinics. There may be a couple here. There used to be. I know there's one in Knoxville that does a lot of it. So I'd probably go there before I'd go to the psychedelics. Yeah.
It's a really interesting topic. And, you know, based on, you know, what I'm seeing is it is going to become more and more mainstream, you know, but man, I'd certainly go to somebody who knows exactly what they're doing. But it's a very interesting topic. And for some people, you know, it's a really, really good option, you know, if you've tried a number of different things. But the saffron suggestion was interesting. I had forgotten about that. You've been real big on saffron.
I love saffron. Yeah, it helps depression, anxiety. Definitely works better than Prozac. Mm.
Super interesting. Well, welcome in, Allison. I see Allison is here. Thank you for hanging out with us. I see some people are arriving. So welcome in, everybody. We're taking live questions here. This is the Performance Medicine Show if you're new. We do this every single Tuesday at 7, answering your health and wellness questions. I see Fred on YouTube has a question here. Let's see here. There we go, Fred. Thank you for being here with us, Fred. What do you recommend for someone in early stages of Parkinson's, i.e. shaky hand? I've heard of peptides being something to look into. Any ideas? I know you're getting, you know, questions just like this quite a bit, and I really appreciate Fred bringing this up.
That's a really good question. We're seeing a lot of Parkinson's now, post-COVID or other things. But I like methylene blue for that. Mm. I really love it for Parkinson's and any kind of neurocognitive disorder. But, you know, the medicines, yeah, go listen to methylene blue. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to do another podcast on methylene blue, maybe in the next week or two. Probably if you're going to be on it, you probably ought to go by and get a G6PD blood test, which I did a podcast on G6PD today, because there's some rare things you want to know before you get on either high dose vitamin C or methylene blue. Is check a G6PD. It's rare, it's hen's teeth. I haven't seen, but maybe one case of a low G6PD enzyme since I've been practicing. So you're probably okay without doing it, but you know, if you want to get academic about it, you should probably get a G6PD. But I like methylene blue. That'd be my first treatment, because you know, once you get on carbidopa levodopa, which is the mainstay of treatment, there's only a certain amount of time it's going to work. So I certainly look at my gut, you know, and make sure my gut was straightened out. You don't have a lot of gut problems. Sometimes that could be the cause of it. Look up methylene blue. That's by far my number one thing. The peptides, BPC-157, may help, but I'm trying to think of other peptides that maybe Synapsin is a nasal spray that I think may help you a little bit. I like Synapsin, which is a great peptide. I've used it for mental alertness. Try those things. And, you know, I agree with you. Look at some of the alternative stuff before you get put on the heavy hitters that may not last that long.
You know, what's interesting is I didn't realize Synapsin was a peptide.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And it's a nasal spray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fred, hope that
a lot helps. Of things are peptides. Insulin's a peptide.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this. Super interesting. Fred, thank you so much for that question. Megan, thank you for hanging out with us this evening. Megan is asking, when is the best time to take saffron?
I have people to take it in the morning or at night. So I have some people take it twice a day, which is fine. You know, if you're having problems sleeping, a little anxious at night, take it at night. If you have a stressful job or your day is stressful, take it at the beginning of the day. Like I told you before, like I'm not real keen on flying all the time. So I'll take one an hour or two before I get on a plane. It's fine.
Hmm.
Yeah. So play around with it a little bit, see when it works best for you. Cause have people take it both morning or evening or both.
Dosing the same. You could do both.
Yeah. You can take it twice a day.
All right, Megan, thank you so much for that question. I'll put this up here from Fred. Thank you, Fred. He's saying that, yes, there is some gut issues.
Always straighten out the gut first. Always look at the gut, because you may be able to reverse some of this stuff.
And I'll go ahead and say this, Fred. We're huge fans of Digest Shield. If you've been on the show or if anybody has been regular with us on Tuesdays, huge fans of Digest Shield. You can find that at shieldnutra.com. What do you recommend for Digest Shield? Is it twice before, two capsules before each meal?
No, one capsule, 30 minutes before each meal. Ideally, if you forget it, take it during the meal. I do that a lot of times. But here's another good supplement that may help you. It's called Dopamind. Mm. We have it in our offices.
And that's a life extension product, right?
That's a life extension product. You might look at that.
Super cool. Mm. Brad, I hope that helps, man. All right, we're going to be here for probably another 10, 15 minutes or so. So if you guys have questions for Doc, go ahead and put them in the comments. I don't think I have missed anybody quite yet. I see Ike and Izzy are getting ready. Are you going to go for a walk after the show?
If it's still light, I'll probably take a bike ride.
You going for a bike ride?
Yeah, I take a bike ride.
And you've already eaten. I still haven't eaten.
Yeah, I may play a little guitar, you know, read a little bit out of my Peter Attilio book. That's a great book. Really, well, it's really interesting. And I'm going to expound on this when I do a book review. But he talks a lot about emotional health. You know, it's very important, you know. I mean, he tells you through his life story. I mean, this guy's a heavy hitter. He went to Stanford Medical School, you know, went to Johns Hopkins to do his resident. I mean, this guy's, but he's a longevity. He's turned into a longevity expert. And, you know, he takes rapamycin. He's really into a lot of stuff. He's a fitness nut. Matter of fact, somebody just gave me this book, Jenny. Thank you.
There it is. Outlive, Dr. Peter Attia. Huge fans of his. I didn't know it was going to be a lot about the emotional stuff.
He started telling his own story. I mean, this is a super achiever is what he did. Brilliant, you know, on another level. As a matter of fact, go listen to one of his podcasts. And if you don't come out of it two and a half hours later, dizzy, then
you weren't listening.
Yeah. Then you fell asleep or something, but I mean, he takes a deep dive on everything he does, but it was interesting because he,
I'm putting this up here from Sonia.
Oh, I love that. Thank you, Sonia. That's great. I agree 100%. Amazing.
Lori is the best. Lori's in our Kingsport office and, she is phenomenal. Huge shout out to Lori. Thank you, Sonia.
We have such a good staff.
They're amazing.
And that kind of thing, like we talked about, the bad doctor talk would never happen at one of our offices.
No.
But anyway, yeah, Dr. Attia, he really gives his own story about where he actually had to go into a rehab center for his emotional health. You'll have to read that chapter, you know, to get over some previous trauma type things. But
that is
really interesting. He ended up in a place in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
No kidding.
You know, he lives in Austin, Texas now, but he's used to live at Stanford out in Palo Alto. But that's a really interesting book. You know, emotional health is very important. You know, you can't be a family doctor and not deal with emotional health. Every other patient that comes in, because it's the cause of a lot of problems. If you don't address it, then you're really not doing a good job. And that's why it just takes a long time to address it. You know, it's not one of those easy things, and they may need more help than I can give them. And I told somebody that today. And I set them up with somebody I really like to talk with, but it's important. There's nothing wrong with therapy. I can tell you that much. This guy, if he did it, I mean, it really surprised me. It kind of impressed me even more about him because he was being honest with himself.
That was my initial impression when you said that is I like him more and I'm more impressed with him. No question about it.
You'll have to read that. You have to read the book. It's a great book. And, you know, he takes a deep dive, but
I'm going to put this up here from Butch on YouTube. Hay fever has been real bad for me this year, and the question is, been taking Benadryl. Any suggestions? Have you seen a bunch of this in the office?
Yeah, it seems like every year allergies, seasonal allergies get worse. But yeah, Benadryl is a toughie because it makes you so tired.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't sleep at night and you don't feel so groggy in the morning from taking it, it works, you know, but, and it used to be that back in the day, back when I had ragweed allergies in the fall, I used to take it back in elementary and junior high. It just made me feel so tired. And then later on, we came out with much better medicines like Claritin, Allegra, Zyrtec. And certainly, I like the Flonase nasal spray. Astapro is another one that works a little differently. It's just come over the counter. But so I would do those things and try to find, you may even want to get an allergy workup and see what you're specifically allergic to. You know, I had that done and I took a few allergy shots for a few months until they gave me the wrong dose and about killed me. I had anaphylaxis with it and ended up spending the night in the ICU on all kinds of stuff. It would have killed me if I hadn't gone to the hospital. At the time, I was in medical school.
But yeah.
They just gave me the wrong concentration of the. So if you ever take an allergy shot, you got to stay in that doctor's office. There's been a lot of people that died because they didn't.
Yeah.
So I'd take the newer stuff if it was me rather than Benadryl. And because there's a lot of, you know, allergies are much better treated. Sometimes I'll give somebody, you know, if it's just spring allergies or hay fever in the fall, I'll give them a shot of Depo-Midrol or something. And usually sometimes one shot will do them the whole season.
It's really interesting.
Called a sinus shot. We do it all the time.
I'm going to put this, Fred. So this is in regards to the Parkinson's question here. Can digestion be taken with other meds she is currently taking?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Fred. Hope that helps. Man, super interesting questions tonight. A lot of gut stuff, as always. Had a couple Parkinson's questions. Man, super interesting. What else is on your mind? We got a couple more minutes here. If you guys have a question, go ahead and
what else is on our mind
and put it in the comments. We'll get Izzy and Ike down here.
Depo-Midrol. Yeah. That's just a steroid shot. Or Celestone's another one that we use. Usually I use more Celestone than Depo-Midrol. Means a shot of steroids. That's what that means, Butch. But, you know, we use it for so much stuff. You don't want to take a lot of, you know, prednisone, that kind of steroids chronically, but for short term, they're miracle medicines.
What is the snot shot we call it the snot shot in the office? Is that the sinus shot?
Yeah, that's a Celestone, and it used to have an antihistamine in it, but we can't get it anymore. So we give them a little oral concoction while we give them the shot, and it works really well.
I've had it; it's really good.
Yeah, you'd be better the next day.
Before we wrap up, what's the next couple podcasts going to be on?
Probably do another one on methylene blue. It's such a good medicine. Over the counter.
Yeah.
I'll probably do a podcast on this Dr. Atiyah's Outlive, the science and art of longevity, how to increase your health span. And he's just really interesting guy. He's made a lot of sense to me, if you can decipher it all. But he said one interesting thing. I was listening to one of his podcasts recently, and he said, because his biggest thing is exercise. He says that's the most important thing, even ahead of what you eat. That's debatable to me because I think maybe what you eat is important, maybe more important, but because you can't out-train a bad diet. That's something we always say. But exercise is so important to your longevity. But he said an interesting statement. He said if you're age 75 is really what you want to be ready for. Because if you're not fit, when you hit age 75, it's like dropping off a cliff as far as your health goes. That's probably true. You know, so you need to be really fit when you turn 75. He says, plan your whole life like you're going to be running a marathon at age 100. That's kind of his goal.
That's really interesting around the 75. I wonder if, you know, say I'm 67, 68 around your age. What does that mean? Okay, at 75, I want to be in my best shape.
That means I have seven more years that I better get fit.
But like, what does that mean for you? Like, what over the next 7 years, what are you going to be doing? What are you going to be focusing on?
Probably the same thing I'm focused on now. You know, eating right, exercising every day, getting a good night's sleep. That's the toughest for me.
Yeah.
All these years of taking call interferes with your sleep cycle. But there's some interesting new peptides coming along for that. Sonia, the name, here's the book right here. It's called Outlive by Dr. Atiyah. Wonderful book. Thick book. He's been writing this for years.
I think it's already like a New York Times bestseller. Like it really
sure.
Went crazy. Yeah. So I'm really
they reviewed it in the Wall Street Journal. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I read the Wall Street every day, and that's just the best newspaper there is. I mean, so many interesting. So it's not just about the stock market. I don't even hardly look at that part. I look at all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting editorials and information on like the thing today about that, talking about doctors burning out because of morality, you know, practicing medicine can compromise your morals. And that's why they're burning out, because they can't, the system they're in is just horrible. You know, and at the end he says, you know, he doesn't see it getting better, but there is a way out. And that's what I'm doing. You know, cash only practice where I have no bosses except for myself. And I have no EMRs. I do paper charts. It's private. It's personalized medicine. I have more time to talk to you. And that's the answer. A lot of doctors can't do that because depending on your specialty, you know, and most of them don't think you can do it. I wasn't sure if I could do it 18 years ago when I gave it all up to hang my own shingle out, but it's worked really well. I wouldn't be practicing medicine right now if I hadn't have done that. I can guarantee you that. I'd be retired like most doctors, 68 years old.
Yeah,
now I'll never retire because I love it. I know more than I've ever known. I love passing the information on, helping somebody else out.
Yeah, I can 100% back you up on that. I don't think there's any way you'd be practicing in a traditional setting. Let's get this up from Motaz. Sorry if this is repeated. For tissue regeneration, muscle building, cartilage, and joint regeneration, what would the doc recommend? Surmorlin or BPC-157? This is for tissue regeneration,
yeah,
muscle building, cartilage, and joint regeneration.
Probably Surmorlin. I love BPC-157 too. It stands for body protection complex, but I use that more for gut problems. But it's good overall as well. But Surmorlin is really a repair hormone, you know, in combination with testosterone, which is an anabolic steroid. The Surmorlin or medicines that class are secretagogues, so they're more responsible for repair, and they work synergistically. So it's a good combination, Surmorlin or Ipamorlin. So really, really, Surmorlin is amazing. But it's not going to work overnight. You got to give it 2-3 months before you'll notice much. It's really good for there. There's Izzy right here and Ike. They're wanting to get on the show. They can't wait any longer.
Oh, come on. There's Izzy right there. Hi, Izzy. I'm going to see you in a couple days.
You're coming for Easter.
Yeah. That's such a good question about Surmorlin. Thank you, Motaz.
Right. Motaz, I hope you're doing good.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And like I said, I'm going to I owe you an email. Really appreciate the insight you gave around the telemedicine. So thank you. Izzy, what's your insights today?
She doesn't care. You know, She has a dog's life, which is a pretty good life for dogs that have a good owner. I just fed her before the podcast.
No, she's a cutie. Is Ike going to come
down? I gave her some treats. Yeah, let's change up. Hang on, Ike. Come here. Your turn. Come here. No. Oh, he's a little bigger.
Ike, you don't fit on his lap anymore, do you?
Ike's about up to 60 pounds, aren't you? He likes to lick my face. I don't like to kiss dogs, but I don't mind him licking me occasionally.
Ike's a cute dog, man. I tell you what, he's got such a good, like, he's just
he's sturdy.
He's strong looking dog.
He's sturdy. I think Izzy gets the best of him, though. Izzy can dominate him if she wants to.
Well, Pop, man, I appreciate it tonight. This was awesome.
All right, man. It was a good show. I'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be up.
Hope everybody has a good Easter out there. And
yeah.
Take care. Enjoy it.
I'll be up there this weekend. Guys, thank y'all so much for hanging out with us every single week. I tell you what, it certainly means the world to us. We do this every single Tuesday, the Performance Medicine Show. We do it at 7 p.m. on Facebook and YouTube. I just want to shout out the people on our team. I see Montana's here, Jasmine, Katie Gegley, our operations manager. I'm sure Carter's in here as well. Guys, I love you so much. And the fact that y'all hang out with us on Tuesday nights after a long day in the office, thank you. Y'all are amazing. Steve, I love you, brother. Thank you for being in here. Motaz, I love you, man. I'm going to get back to you soon. Linda, thank you. Guys, y'all are the best. Sonia, great stuff. We're going to be back Tuesday, 7 p.m. If you haven't signed up for Performance Weekly, do that. It's on our website. You'll get an email from us every single Tuesday with all of our best content. Like we said earlier, this week the main focus was G6PD. We also talked a little bit about male infertility from Explain This and the star of that show, Robin Riddle. Guys, we love you. Pop, I love you, man.
Hey, man. Love you too. Good night.
Mom in the back, love you. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.